This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Folks, the U.S. Department of Education is resuming its efforts to collect on defaulted federal student loans, reviving what they were doing before COVID stepped in and had all kinds of continuances and disruptions in the collection of that. And here to talk to us about it is Andrew Gillen, research fellow at the Cato Institute's Center for Educational Freedom. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Andrew, what is this going to look like as we try to, I guess, get back into the game of collecting on this debt that's owed?
Yes, that's a great question. So it's going to look very, very different to a certain segment of students and to kind of policymakers in general. So one of the things for policymakers that the student loan pause, which lasted from 2020 until basically 2024, one of the things that did is it made student loans very expensive for the government to provide. And so the government's losing a ton of money on these student loans. And so one of the things that restarting payments will do is make it so that student loans aren't as big of a coster for the government. For the students, obviously, a lot of them have graduated in those few years, so they might have never even made a student loan in their lives yet, a payment, that is. And so for them, just the process of you know, budgeting for that and figuring out where to send the money, that'll be new to them. Now, this isn't you know, a bad thing, in my opinion. It's just there are going to be some transitional pains there.
And if I recall, in one of your previous articles, you mentioned that I want to say prior to the income-driven repayment plan that was devised, that only 40%, just under 40% of students were repaying under that model. Are the models going to actually change now?
So that's still an open question. So for your listeners who don't know all the background here, so there's the normal student loan repayment, which is just like a mortgage or a car payment where you pay, you know, $250 a month for, you know, 10 years or 15 years. But there's also these income-driven repayment plans, which instead of paying a set amount per month, you pay like 10% of your income above, say, the poverty line. And the really nice thing about those plans is that, particularly when you first graduate from college, or if you drop out, you tend to have a lot of like unstable employment for a little while. So there might be months where like you literally don't have a job that month. You can't afford, you know, the $250. And so the nice thing about these income-driven repayment plans is that they adjust your payment to based on your income. The problem is that these plans tend to be very badly designed. And they also tend to be irresistible for politicians to monkey around with the parameters to make them extremely generous. So one of the things the Biden administration tried to do was they took kind of some existing authority to create these income driven repayment plans, and they basically dropped the payment down so low, and they increased the poverty line exemption to 225% of the poverty line. So basically, anybody who made less than like $30,000 would never have to make a student loan payment, and if you did have to make a payment, it was only 5% on your income above that amount. And so it basically turned student loans from a loan program into a delayed grant program, because it was basically just going to make it so very few people were repaying their loans. Now, right now, that particular plan, it was called the SAVE plan, that's tied up in courts, and so it's been paused by the courts. And one of the things that Republicans in the House are thinking about doing in their reconciliation bill is throwing out that particular plan. And so I would expect that particular plan to go away, either by court order or by a new legislation from Congress. But there are these other plans out there as well. And so I like the concept of income-driven repayment. I just think we've kind of botched the implementation.
So how do we actually get out of this? It seems like this is very circular, right? We're talking about existing loans and trying to figure out how people are going to pay them. All the while, we're still lending gobs and gobs of money to folks that are going to go into a field of work that we know, based on salary surveys, cannot support the debt that they're creating and are likely to default and likely not to pay it back anytime soon.
Yeah, so there are a ton of these problems out there. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons why government lending is a bad idea. Because if you look at a private lender, no private lender would lend to, a slacker student who's going to a bad college and majoring in a field with high unemployment, right? Like that raises so many red flags that every private lender would run screaming from that. But the government just will send these checks year after year to students who may not know any better, and it's kind of setting both them and the government up for a lot of financial pain in the future. And so I think that's one of the main reasons that we should switch to a private lending system, where you actually have lenders doing due diligence about, okay, is this educational investment likely to lead to the student being able to repay this loan? And the problem is, for right now, the government's making, I've seen good estimates anywhere from a quarter to a third of the loans that the government makes are just these kind of predictably terrible financial investments that don't benefit the student, don't benefit the government. The only one who makes out like a bandit from these are the schools, because they get all the tuition money and they get to keep all that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more, plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be that hard to match up a particular degree in the compensation that they would expect to get. We have all kinds of compensation studies that are done biannually, some even monthly, you know, and kind of match that up. I mean, and this would affect all. I mean, even if you were to have a degree in accounting or a CPA, some of these schools you're leaving with $500,000 in debt. And, you know, I mean, the entry level of an accountant doesn't support that. Not in your wildest dreams. Could anyone walk in and get a loan like that?
Yeah. Well, and the poster boy example of this is there's a dentist a few years ago who had $1 million in student loan debt, which is insane. There's no reason it ever should have gotten to that level. Now, fortunately, that's extremely rare. Like, there's a reason this case made headlines, right? So most debt, particularly at the undergraduate level, is actually pretty reasonable amounts. The main problem you run in at the undergraduate level is if you're majoring in a field where the job offers just aren't that good, even what we would think of as kind of a reasonable amount of debt can be problematic if you've got a really low salary. Where we see a huge amount of problems are with graduate school debt, because those are uncapped. So students can really borrow, you know, $100,000, $200,000. It's not rare to see law students coming out with you know, six figures of debt. And that's fine if they end up at, you know, one of these big law firms that pays a lot of money, but a lot of them don't. A lot of them end up relatively low paid. And if you've got six figures of student loan debt, that just, the math just not work out.
And we still don't know, not to bring this, you know, curveball in, but AI is having a huge impact on, I think, a lot of these high paying jobs that you come out of, right? Because there are a lot of activities that you would involve yourself in. Just let's just say the legal practice as one. You're seeing the utilization of AI a lot more. There is a little bit of a pushback on that that's occurring at the present time. But in other walks of life, you're seeing it having a huge impact. You can't bill the numbers that you would typically bill your clients when you're just pressing a couple of buttons and kicking out reports, you know, that you actually would have had actual time invested in a lot of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are beginning to see the first kind of big job displacements. So from what I've seen, it hasn't led to a lot of layoffs yet, but what it's done is it's dried up the entry level positions for things like coding. And if you remember, just a few years ago, like whenever an industry was going through a downfall, everybody was always like, oh, just learn to code. And now you got people graduating with computer science degrees that are really struggling to get these entry level positions, because the AI coding is one of the things that does very well. I would imagine paralegals might fall into that same category, where you aren't quite getting rid of your lawyer, but a lot of the lawyer's helpers, so these paralegals, a lot of that research is probably now being done by AI, or will be soon. And so I think we're starting to see the beginning of what I would call job displacement from AI. But I think this is just the beginning. Like, this is only going to get bigger and bigger from here on out, because these models are just getting better and better over time.
And the reason I bring it up to further your point about the government getting out of this business is that we all know they're not very nimble, right? And they don't react real time. But you have a lot of stuff that's happening right now real time that's going to completely alter, modify salaries across all kinds of disciplines, and we're just keep throwing money at kids. I don't know that we're even thinking about, you know, what this job market's going to look like when we get out.
Yeah. Well, but this is one case where I feel like the college students themselves are actually ahead of the curve here. Because I've been studying this industry for a very, very long time. And you know, one thing that was always true is that, you know, enrollments went up. So, you know, every year there were more college students than there was the year before. And that stopped. So we actually have about 1.5 million fewer college students today than we did, say, 2-3 years ago. Actually, it might be 4 years ago. So anyway, the point is we've sort of plateaued on college enrollment. Now, you could argue maybe some of this is due to demographics, but I think a big part of the story here is students see that a lot of the supposed skills that they think they're going to get in these colleges just are not going to be valued enough to make it worthwhile. So I think we're starting to see kind of a lot of college students make this decision that maybe college isn't the immediate answer that everybody always thought it was, the safe answer.
Well, the interesting thing for me is that when you get down to the granular level, and I know that you and others at Cato have written about this, it is the increases of administrative staff and administration at these universities, and not really student services. And, you know, it's more so backroom operations going on and bigger salaries being paid there and more people being hired there than anywhere else in higher ed.
Yeah, absolutely. Administrative bloat is a huge, huge problem throughout higher education. And I really think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why it happened. But one of the things that might help reverse this is if all of a sudden we got fewer students, if these schools start to see budgetary pressures, I think that might be one of the only things that can address this administrative bloat issue.
The other thing is implementation of AI by administration and whether or not they're going to do that and lead to, you know, a reduction in force. I don't believe it's going to happen as long as we keep letting students borrow as much money as they can borrow, because they're all about keeping those tuitions as high as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the university finances are very, very tricky because the drop in enrollments. Now, this isn't going to affect your flagship schools or anything like that, because they can just admit more students. But for the schools that we're really going to start to see enrollments dropping, the way universities have set up their finances, they've converted their labor costs, so things like faculty, into a fixed cost because they grant tenure. And so just very small changes in an enrollment can have really huge impacts on their finances because they've made these lifelong commitments to their professors in terms of employment. And so we could actually see a lot of movement relatively soon. Now we're going to see it at these open access institutions that we're going to see the enrollment hit first. Because right now, you know, if you know, Ohio State, if there aren't as many college students, instead of admitting, you know, 10% of applicants, they'll admit 15%. So like, they'll still be able to fill all their seats. But as they do that, they're going to draw even more students away from these other colleges that are sort of lower down the pecking order, for lack of a better word to describe it. And so we could see some pretty big impacts at those schools first. And how they respond to that, I think, will be very interesting. So do they respond to that budget hit by getting rid of majors? Do they respond to it by cutting administrative bloat? Do they cut the, student athletics? Like, it'll be very interesting. And I don't think every school is going to respond the same way. But that's definitely something that I'm watching is how they respond to this.
If you would, for the listening audience, I think a lot of people realize that a lot of schools are compelled, in order to develop the quality of their staff, of their professors, of that menu, so to speak, is they have to offer tenure to them for that, because they would not otherwise probably go teach at that school, right? So that's one of the reasons they do that. Is that what you were talking about earlier?
So to an extent, honestly, at this point, I think it's just kind of force of habit. So
there's no redeeming value to it at all.
Well, so if you're at one of these top schools, and your professors are doing, this cutting edge research, you do generally want to have some long term protection. But if you're talking about, a community college, they really don't need to offer their professors tenure because they're like, if you're teaching at a community college, you're teaching. You really don't have, and you're teaching so many classes that you don't have a whole lot of time to be doing research. So the controversial research is where the tenure protection really comes in. And that's where it's like most defensible. But like for community colleges, you really don't need tenure protection because you're teaching accounting 101, right? Like you don't need tenure protection to do that. And to their credit, a lot of community colleges don't have tenure. But they'll rely on a lot of adjuncts to teach these classes. We're basically like part-time professors.
Yeah.
I
did that for 9 years.
Yeah. Well, me too. Yeah. I would think that tenure would become less common going forward as well. Just because if we do enter one of these more volatile time periods where you maybe AI really impacts computer science, but it has no impact on, anthropology or something like that. Like all of a sudden your computer science and your anthropology departments are out of balance, right? So having things like tenure around that sort of lock you into these long-term inflexible arrangements, I would hope to see some of those start to disappear.
Let me ask this last question. It's on our text line. It comes out comes up a lot. We only have a minute, though, Andrew. Government guarantees all loans and schools have no risk. Yay or nay?
That is correct. Yeah. So the school basically cannot lose from taking a student showing up on their campus with a student loan, because even if the student drops out after that semester, the school still gets to keep all that money. Even if the student drops out and then never makes a payment, school gets to keep the money. Government loses the money, and students' financial future is dinged by credit reports and wage garnishment and stuff like that.
And the school, there's no failure rate that government looks at and dings schools at all, period.
There's one right now that's called the cohort default rate. So if 40% of your students default, the government will cut off future access to student loans for that school. Or if you're above 30% of students defaulting for, I think, 3 years, the school will also cut off. But they won't go back and, try to extract that money from the school. So, bygones are bygones. They'll just cut you off for future loans.
So they just can't get future student loans. All right.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you joining us today, Andrew Gillen, research fellow at the Cato Institute Center for Educational Freedom. You provided a lot of really great background information on this. And I mean, this is going to continue to be a problem unless and until we just truly get our hands around it and figure out something that's going to make sense for sure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk In text line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave Butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more, plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.